below worthless. You're like below dust. You have no value at all. And you have to understand that to be a shepherd in this culture was the lowest rung job. It's what the youngest child would get as their duty. And you also have to remember how important sheep were. Sheep in this culture were the primary source of their clothing. You guys like to wear clothes? You think we spend a little bit of money and a little bit of time and a little bit of work in our clothes? Now, we have all kinds of natural cloths and synthetic cloths. And, you can go down to Walmart and Target. I mean, you walk right now and you could have more clothes than you can imagine. Or if you want to get it a little bit cheaper, you can go down to the thrift store tomorrow. And if you've got one of those little burlap bags, what is it, $4? If you've got a burlap bag, you can get all the clothes you can stuff in a burlap bag for $4. That's a pretty good deal. But what happens when you have to make your own clothes? And what resources do they have? Well, wool was the primary source of cloth. That's how they made their clothes, by and large. To a Jewish person in particular, watching the sheep was incredibly important. And Bethlehem was in close proximity to Jerusalem. And Bethlehem was kind of, in a sense, it was kind of the agricultural sheep center to provide all of the sacrifices, all of the lambs, all the offering that went on in Jerusalem. So these shepherds weren't just the ordinary guys. These guys were the lowest caste. You think of the job that you don't want. You know, for a long time, I was an insulator. Now, in the construction world, the lowest rung on construction is being an insulator or a sheetrocker. They kind of fight. You know, those are the lowest two. I didn't know that when I started being an insulator. I came to discover that that most people consider insulators to be potheads. I'm like, wow, that's interesting. I'm a pastor, and I'm a little bit different. But you go in the lowest rung, and you could always tell that you were the lowest rung by how people treated you. It's okay. And so we see these shepherds as the lowest rung guys. And you also have to remember, being a shepherd isn't like one of those jobs that like you're completely off the clock. That's why there's multiple shepherds. You know, I mean, you have to sleep sometime, but the sheep constantly needed help because they're, as people know, the dumbest animals on the planet. And they're not like, you know, really, you know, they don't have claws that they can break out. They're not really fast. They don't have a lot of good defense mechanisms other than they have thick woolly fur that makes it hard to like kill. And if you've sheared the sheep, all of a sudden they become much more prone to being able to be killed by wild animals. So you have to watch them constantly. Do you have that kind of job? Do you understand that kind of pressure of constantly kind of being on call? Constantly having to have your guard up? Because what happens if you're the shepherd and you take a nap or you kind of drift someplace else and you're doing something else? And that's when the wolf comes in and steals a sheep. Well, that's on you. And you know how it is. When it rains, it pours. Whenever something can go wrong, it will go wrong. And so to be a shepherd was a constant type of job. It was a hard, low-rung job. And when you look at the Christmas story, is there any group of people, is there any person, other than maybe Mary, that gets a better representation of what God is up to? No. The Magi we'll look at on Christmas Eve, they looked at nature. They saw the stars and they're like, man, something amazing is going on. We need to get involved in this. Joseph, he had an angel come to him, but it wasn't like, I mean, when you read this description of angels, I mean, they lived out in the dark, in the wilderness. And they had like, you know, we're spoiled. We're used to light shows with pyrotechnics and rock bands with, you know, multiple woofers. And you're like, you feel the boom. It was that type of presentation to these guys that, I mean, they hung outside all the time. They get this representation of angels singing this worship song. They were interrupted. And I think being interrupted is something that we don't like. You ever get in the midst of doing a job, a task that you have, and somebody interrupts you? I always find this to happen as a dad. I get in the midst of doing something that I think is really important. A lot of times it's even for the family, and all of a sudden a kid comes up and it's urgent. They have to have my full attention right now. And it's hard as a dad to not respond like, I don't have time right now. And then sometimes I don't. But do I have room in my life to be interrupted by God? See, that's part of what the gospel is about. It interrupts all the important stuff that we have on our list. And we all have that list, especially this time of year. All the things that we need to get done. And God comes into our midst and He interrupts us. The question is, how are we going to respond? And you know what? The first response the shepherds had is probably one of the primary responses we have when we get interrupted. Fear. Well, what if I don't get my stuff done? What if I get distracted and I drop the ball? And, you know, for the shepherds, what happens if I get it focused and captured and all this message and all the excitement that these angels are bringing and one of the sheep gets taken? You see, fear can steal away this interruption that God gives in the gospel message. But the shepherds didn't let fear stand in their way. They felt it. But they moved past it. And they overcame their fear, and they believed the gospel message. I mean, think of how crazy it sounds that God is bringing salvation to all people. I mean, that's a huge, crazy message and story. That is not something that you find in any religion. Like, religions say, well, God will help you if you're the right type of person and you do the right types of things. Here's all of a sudden this message that God is coming. He's not waiting for us to come to Him. He's coming to us. And it's salvation for all people. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter if you're a lowly shepherd or you're a king. It's for all people. And He's doing it through some baby wrapped in clothes in a stable? Really? I mean, that is, like, what thing doesn't fit there? Those don't match. Yet, the shepherds believed. Do you ever struggle with belief? Things don't add up. Things don't make sense. You're like, God, really? I mean, this and this, they don't fit. And how did the shepherds respond to that doubt? They responded by not just an empty belief. Well, sure, that could be. No, they responded with active faith. They put motion by actively, and we got to see Ethan and Eli acting that out. What did they do? They went walking and they wandered through our aisles looking for this child. Do you realize that part of what the gospel message requires is an active faith that gets us off of our seat trying to deduct how reasonable it is and actually moving? Going in motion, exercising faith, finding Jesus. He's there. He came to us, but we have to actively in motion move towards Him. And that's what the shepherds did. And how perfect of an example. In the midst of their search, in the midst of their finding, they worship and they share the story. You know, if you want an example of what Christmas should look like, the shepherds are the example. They accept being interrupted. They get past their fear. They actively in faith pursue Jesus to worship Him, and then they share the good news. They spread it. They tell others. It's a great example. The character of the shepherds is a picture of how we should respond to the presence of Christ. The question is, will we? Will we respond like the shepherds this Christmas? Or will we be like a different character? And the different character I'm referring to, we only see really one verse. It's verse 7. And that character is the innkeeper. Now, remember, the reason that Mary and Joseph are in Bethlehem is because the census is mandated by Caesar Augustus to go to your town of family origin and to report, hey, I'm here, so that there's a census that can be taken. And why? Well, Rome needs money because Rome is about military and power and control and spreading the kingdom of man. Again, Luke, we've been looking at it for the last year. It's about what kingdom are we about? Are we about my personal kingdom? Are we about the Roman kingdom? Or are we about the kingdom of God? And so because of this census, because of all the movement and all the traveling, you know, it was a good time to be an innkeeper, but you were overwhelmed. Business was good, but it was overwhelmingly good. And we see this innkeeper busy. Now, he had a much better job than the shepherds. I mean, he owned a business. He had assets. He had equity. He had resources. He had the ability to say, I'll let these people in, but I'm going to keep those people out. And here comes a desperate couple in a crazy, busy time. He didn't get the angels. He didn't get the lights and the pyrotechnics. He didn't get the type of presentation of gospel that the shepherds got. He got two needy people knocking on his door saying, please, can we find room? I find it interesting how a lot of times the most important things in life aren't like big. The opportunities that God most commonly gives us are those little unexpected ones that don't seem very significant. And when you are somebody who has resources like the innkeeper, I mean, he had resources. People are always knocking on your door. The more you have, the more you'll have people say, hey, I need help. And so, if you're somebody that aspires to have more, be prepared to have discernment in giving because you're going to be asked to give more. We got done talking about that just last week in Luke chapter 12. Those who've been given more are expected more. And we see that in the innkeeper. And what does he do? Does he turn them away? Does he blow them off? No. But he gives them the leftovers. He gives them the seconds. He squeezes in a little bit of secondary room. Well, you know, I don't have a room in the inn, but I do have a barn out back. And I find myself being much more like the innkeeper than the shepherds. I don't know about you, but I have never had angels come and give me the light show and speak face to face with me, or even in a dream. I never had that happen. Maybe you have. I'd love to hear those stories. But I have had a lot of people come and say, hey, I need help. Can you help me? And a lot of times, I just feel annoyed. I feel bothered. Sometimes I do what the other innkeepers have done. Oh, I'm sorry, I don't have any room. See you later. But most commonly, I do what this innkeeper did. You know what? I can't give you the best. I can't give you primary. But I'll give you the leftovers. I'll give you the secondary. So I ask you, whose story do you identify with more? Do you find your response in Christmas to be more like the shepherds? Who you allow yourself to be interrupted. And you just give yourself fully into worship and spreading the good news. Or are you more like the innkeeper? Who you make some room, but it's the leftover room. It's the secondary space. You see, the other thing I find about the innkeeper is how far distance-wise was the innkeeper from the shepherds in the fields outside of Bethlehem? Probably not that far. Maybe a couple miles at the most. When you hear the description of what happened with the shepherds, You would have seen it from a long ways away. It was there. But the busyness, the hubbub of an inn, it caused the innkeeper to miss it. I don't know if you guys have seen this part of the Christmas story, but it's a very strong current in the Christmas story. We see it with the shepherds and the Magi in particular. There's something about God's natural revelation and special revelation that is so present in Christmas. And very few people get it. Very few people see it. And I don't know if you guys, you know, hear that those two phrases, special revelation and natural revelation. Let me clarify that for a moment. Special revelation is like what we see with the angels. It doesn't happen every day that angels show up and give you a message with this light show. That's special revelation. And you know what? You might get that once in a lifetime. Maybe never in a lifetime. But natural revelation are the things that God has created that we all see. But most of the time, we don't see it for what it is. We just see past it. When we get to some of the parables, we're going to see this principle and work more. And really, it's a key component of this whole idea of the kingdom of God and the gospel. That God's presence is everywhere all the time, but we don't have eyes to see it. And the innkeeper, he didn't have eyes to see it. I want to share with you a time in my life where God's natural revelation just like burst into a scene that was so relevant. And I share this because, you know what? We cannot really seek special revelation. We can't seek the experience that the angels had. We can pray, say, hey, God, I'd love to have an opportunity like that sometime. Bring that about in my life. But what we can do is we can train our eyes to see the natural revelation that God gives us all the time that we normally just miss out on. And the story takes place for me a couple years ago, almost exactly 2 years ago. I was insulating a house up on the top of Boone Road on Summers. Now, this is probably about a $14 million house. All log house. We're talking about 12,000 square feet. A monstrosity. We're talking about a place that it was a couple with one child that was going to live in there about a year. And I was working hard in this house, climbing up into rafters to insulating walls. I've been working for about 10 hours when I needed a break. And I walk outside of my truck and I look out across Flathead Lake and I hear this song as a fresh snow starts falling. And I'll tell you what, it was natural revelation that every time I hear this song, I go back to. That God's tender mercy is like that snow. And it comes and it covers all of my crud, all of my sin. And He does exactly that. He creates in me a clean heart. And He renews a right spirit in me. It's part of the natural revelation. And I want to encourage you to develop in your life the ability to do what we sang about in the secret, in the quiet place you were there. Because those quiet, secret places don't happen. They don't happen unless we open our eyes to see. Unless we pause and allow God's natural revelation interrupt us, we'll just continue in the perpetual cycle. And so I want to encourage you, take moments to look at the natural things. Remember how Jesus taught in Luke, just again, we were looking, consider the ravens and the lilies of the field. The simple things in nature, Jesus says, stop and consider. And you can go ahead and cut this song. Thanks, Ted. That was a good effect. I saw Ashley as we were, that song was starting. She's like, what's going on? I hear something. And I also encourage you to put in your life things like music. And you can personalize it. Like, maybe you don't like John Foreman like I do, like that song. Maybe like the old hymns. But if you would create moments, those secret places in your life, and consider the simple, ordinary things of nature, God is going to speak. Well, we're going to look at Mary. And Mary, primarily, we see her story told in chapter 1 of Luke. And I considered reading some of this, but I know that we're familiar with the Christmas story, so we're just going to kind of look at some of the highlights. I want to reiterate, and this is a very important part of the Christmas story that oftentimes we don't get, but it's the romance story between Joseph and Mary. Now, remember, Mary is pledged to be married to Joseph. She was in the engagement stage. And even last week, we were looking at kind of the Jewish culture and how they did engagement and how for the bride-to-be, it was a very odd time. It was an odd time because you were pledged to be married, but you didn't get a ring like in our culture. You had just simply drinking from a cup to say yes. And you were waiting. You know, in our time of culture, we set dates on the calendar, right? I mean, that's a very big part of how the engagement marriage process works. You know, it might not happen as soon as you get engaged, but generally within a month or two of being engaged, you've got a date on the calendar, and that's when it's going to take place, and you get to prepare and plan for that date. But for a Jewish bride, it was something different than that. It was an indefinite date. And that's the condition, that's the state of Mary's relationship with Joseph. Now, another interesting difference between Jewish culture and our culture is in our culture, marriage is the ceremony. Sex is its own thing entirely. Right now in our culture, most people have sex way before they actually go to a marriage ceremony. But interesting enough, when you look at the Old Testament in particular, and you look at the relationship of sex and marriage, you'll see that according to the law of the Old Testament, sex is marriage. Sex brought about all of the responsibilities of marriage. It was, in essence, kind of the final thing. You could go through the ceremony, but even in the ceremony in Jewish culture, the ceremony wasn't done until the couple went into the wedding chamber and consummated the marriage. Then, okay, the wedding is done. It was a very different take. And so when you were in the engagement process like Mary was, being interrupted and being told you were pregnant, well, wow, that messed up everything. Now, I was trying to figure out a way to help you understand the feeling of a bride at the time that Mary sat. And I've tried to tell you some of Jewish history, but interesting enough, there is a hip musician out there that has a song that tells the story better than me. Why don't we watch and listen to Taylor Swift? Maybe. We've been having issues with this video. Or maybe not. Did it freeze up? Okay. Well, bummer. The song is Love Story by Taylor Swift. And she talks about waiting for Juliet. You guys have probably heard it. Only 55 million have watched this particular video on YouTube. So it's been watched by a few people. My point is this. There's this expectation of love and romance. And in the midst of that, Mary gets this news that she's pregnant. Now, one of the things that we forget about that is, according to the Jewish law, if you get pregnant outside of marriage, part of the Jewish law is that you'd be sentenced to death through stoning. Talk about a strict culture and a strict enforcement of morality. The news that Mary gets is terrifying. Because who's going to believe her? We don't believe people get pregnant without having sex. We just don't. We know better. And one of the things that's fascinating when you read this story in Luke, she gets the word, she receives the word from this angel, okay, let it be to me as you foretold. And then she does something that was very wise. She goes away. She goes away for 3 months to visit her obviously close, special Aunt Elizabeth. And when you see the exchange between Mary and Elizabeth, you see that they have a relationship. And one of the things I want to encourage you that we see from the story of Mary, when God puts something in your heart, when God gives you a dream, you have to be very careful who you share that with in its beginning stages. Because it seems pretty crazy and wild and unbelievable. And when you see Elizabeth's greeting to Mary, Elizabeth immediately agrees and resonates. She understands what's going on. And so for the first 3 months, and of course, what happens over that first trimester of pregnancy? That first trimester, it's not very obvious. You can get by and nobody knows, really. You get past that first trimester, and then it's pretty obvious. Something's going on. So in its beginning stages, Mary finds encouragement and help and hope. But even in the midst of not being able to share and not being able to be believed by other people, we see in Luke chapter 1, we see worship again being just at the very foundation of the Christmas story. We see Mary's song in verses 46 through 55. And we see a response in worship that it's almost like even a prophetic worship. She's seeing the redemption of humanity through this child growing in her womb. And I want to encourage you, one of the things about worship is it allows us to see what's yet to come. We normally see things really clearly that were in the past, like, oh yeah, if I had done that instead of that, that would have turned out differently, right? Part of what God is doing in the Christmas story is showing us if we see things now the way they're going to be, we can be in kind of the forefront. And we see Mary getting that, and she worships and sees the work of Jesus, why Jesus is still growing in her womb in the very first trimester. And it's just it's such a beautiful thing. And then, of course, Mary does something very brave. She goes back. She goes back. She goes back to Nazareth. And she is ready to face all of the looks and the doubts and the disbelief. I really wish that there was included a story in the Gospels about Mary and Joseph's conversations. I really wish that was there. You know, it's ready now? in about 30 seconds. Okay, well, maybe we'll watch that. Now, one of the reasons I really would love to hear their conversations is because in Matthew we see his story and in Luke we see her story. But we don't see them talking about it together. But the friction in the relationship, we're ready? Okay, well, we'll go ahead and watch the video now. I'm sorry that that didn't hit when it was supposed to hit, but you get the picture of what a Jewish engagement was, largely by just that portion of her song. And I want to encourage you that the tension that Joseph and Mary felt was in the midst of that early romance, that romance of all the doubt and insecurity that comes in the engagement process. And you throw in that the confusion of pregnancy, and it is one of those situations that is impossible to get your arms around. And to have the response that we see in both, but I'm focusing on Mary today, where you're brave enough to say, you know what? God is at work inside of me. You might think it's something different entirely. In fact, you don't believe it at all, but it's true. Can I just encourage us that you know what happens when somebody hears about the work of God inside of us? They doubt it. Why? Because there's all of those Christians that they've known in the past who've been hypocrites and liars, and it's not been real and genuine. When God gives us a dream of something, there's all those people that don't believe it's of God. They just think it's our idea. But God is at work doing a miracle inside of us. And we have to be brave enough, as Mary was brave, to engage the people in our life and say, you know what? You don't have to believe it, but it's true. This Immaculate Conception is still and has been one of the hardest things for people to get their arms around. But it's at the heart of the Christmas story. And it's at the heart of what God is about. He doesn't make things easy for us to understand. But He invites us into the story and He grows something inside of us. And my question to you, are you open to God's purpose in your life? Or are you choosing the safe route to be the doubter, to be the skeptic, to be the person that goes, well, you know, that doesn't work that way. That's a nice story, but no, it couldn't be. Or are you brave enough to be like this probably 14, 15-year-old girl saying, God, I'm yours. And what you're doing inside of me, I embrace and I worship you fully. As we enter into this busy, hectic Christmas season, maybe it's not so much enter, maybe as we finish this week, may we create room on our inside for what God has. Would you pray with me? Lord Jesus, I thank you that I can relate to these characters in the Christmas story. I can remember the stages of romance and falling in love and that frail state of a relationship where there's so much passion and excitement and hope and dreams. And I can understand what it is to work a lowly job that people look down on. I can understand what it is to be busy and have responsibility and resources and have people ask me for stuff. And Lord, I can identify with these characters. Lord, may I not respond as the innkeeper responded. Lord, may we as people not respond as just most of the people in Bethlehem that night who missed it all. But may we have eyes to see and ears to hear. Lord, may we be like Mary, who has faith to believe that You're at work inside of us and You're doing an amazing miracle that's going to change everything. And Jesus, may the good news of the gospel, may the good news of Your kingdom, may it be at work in us and through us this week in all we do. May we worship You fully. May we be the good kind of characters in the Christmas story. We pray this in Your holy name. Amen.